been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday. It is the start of a new week. It is April 4th, live edition of Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and chartered financial analyst Barry Kite. And we have a mixed open to the market today. So far, we've got the Dow down, but it's only down 16 right now. It was down about 150 just a little while ago. The Nasdaq's having a pretty good day. I think Elon Musk is probably at the center of that move in the Nasdaq today. We'll talk about that in a minute. The Nasdaq's up 160. It's back to 14,421. The S&P is up 16 right now to 4,562. It's up about 0.4%. The small caps are down. Russell 2000 at 2,088, down 3 points today. Pretty good day for crude oil. It's up $4.11 per barrel. That's a 4.1% move. Pretty good action in the energy stock so far today. Gold continues to march towards 2,000. It's at 1932 once again. The gold stocks had a pretty good week last week. Gold is up $9 today. Silver's down 21 cents to 24.44. And the 10-year, okay, the big news was the inversion on Friday. Barry, maybe you can check, see if we're inverted when we get ready, done with our little welcome here. The 10-year's at 2.40. Question is, where's the 2-year right now? It did invert last week, and Bitcoin is down 300 to 46,154. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and we've got Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, on board with us again today. Barry, right now the 10-year. Good morning, the 10-year. We got to talk yield inversion here in the show.
You and I are upright, thankfully. Yield curve is inverted. So the 2 years at 247, 10 years at 243. So that's a pretty big difference from where we left off. I think we were 2 basis points the other way when we left off the week last week, and so we are, you know, officially inverted from the 2 year on. I mean, you got 2 year at 247, 3 years at 264, 5 years at 258, and 7 years at 253. So, 10 years at 243. I mean, I guess it's not, it's not completely inverted if you want to go all the way out to 20 year, but the 20 year's at 266, and 30 year sits at 2.5. So, pretty much mostly inverted. Let's call it that.
Absolutely, and luckily we're not inverted, we're upright, but we'll see. You know, I think it's a pretty big deal, the inversion of the yield curve. You may differ with me. We'll talk about it here in a little bit. The market didn't like it on Friday when the curve did invert. For the first time, you got to go back to 2019, right before COVID. The yield curve inverted, and then you got to go clear back to 2006. Okay, the yield curve inverted then, and that definitely was a foreshadowing and a predictor of the recession that hit in 2007, 2008, the Great Recession. That's why I give quite a bit of credence to this latest yield curve inversion. The Dow was down 550 when we last saw it on Friday. It's down 36 today, and the NASDAQ was down 222 on Friday. But I think Elon Musk has perked up the NASDAQ today with the announcement that he bought 9% of Twitter. Twitter. Well, you know, you can't drive a Twitter, You can't put an electric battery in a Twitter. But I think Musk, you know, I don't think Musk likes, he doesn't like censorship. That's my take on Elon Musk. And we'll see what direction he takes Twitter. There are some speculating that he's going to buy the whole company and take it private. We'll see what his plans are with Twitter, but I'm sure he's going to lend a big voice to Twitter you know, hopefully be able to monetize it a little better. They've never really – if there's anybody that can monetize Twitter, I think, Barry, it's Elon Musk.
Well, I would almost argue he already has. I mean, he's used
– He already has.
He's certainly used you know, social media, you know, various platforms over the years, right, to
yes.
To help promote Tesla and help you know, raise money when he needed to raise money prior to them becoming cash flow positive. So – yeah, if there's somebody who can make it positive, right, it would certainly be him. He has some experience.
He's gotten in
already.
Trouble on Twitter, yeah, and I think he's been banned a few times from Twitter. The SEC doesn't like him using Twitter. We'll see where it all
goes.
That's
the part that scares me is the SEC. I could really care less about all the other stuff.
Yeah. You know,
the SEC certainly has dinged him along the way. So that's the part that where he gets himself in trouble, at least from our business perspective, put it that way.
Yeah. Okay, well, the global stock markets, they're doing fairly well. Hong Kong up 2%, India up 2.2%, more Russian sanctions. Elon Musk takes a 9.2% stake in Twitter. Twitter right now is up, Dorsey's stock company up 21%, up 21%. You know what? And you got a lot. Look, you have a lot of investors that follow Elon around. These people that own Tesla, they are devotees to Tesla. They are disciples to Elon Musk. They're not selling their Tesla. I got to believe that this investment in Twitter is going to bring a lot of Tesla disciples, investors, over to the Twitter side of the equation. It certainly is doing that today. I mean, nothing has changed at Twitter other than Elon has a 9% stake. The stock's up 21%. You know, even I'm thinking, you know, that's a pretty interesting move because he has a following. Elon Musk has a huge following. Last time I looked, Tesla was a trillion-dollar company. Yeah, $1.1 trillion from a standing start of nothing to $1.1 trillion. I think the Musk magic touch could really be a big deal for Twitter here. I'm surprised it's not up more, actually. Wedbush, Dan Ives is saying, Elon's large stake in Twitter is just the start. Okay, well, consider Elon also owns Solar City out in California. He owns SpaceX, rockets to the moon. He bought 73 million shares of Twitter, good for a 9.2% passive stake in the company. But I don't think he's done there. I agree. Dan Ives points out that Musk has been critical of Twitter for what he believes is a failure to adhere to free speech principles. God bless Elon. I'm all for those free speech principles, which fundamentally undermines democracy. That's what Musk says. Musk has all previously toyed with the idea of building a new platform. Of course, Trump has his Truth Social, which as of now is only available on the in the iPhone store. It's not out there for Android yet, and it's not on the internet yet. But instead of creating his own, it sounds like he's going to try to change Twitter. Twitter did not immediately respond to a request for comment from Seeking Alpha. Ives, who covers Tesla, added that this move is furthering of Musk building out his tentacles. Well, you know, Google's got massive tentacles. Facebook has massive tentacles. Microsoft, most of these big tech stocks have huge tentacles. And let's not forget Twitter. Dorsey also owns Square. Musk is now going to be a big player in social media. Okay, so it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Now, when we come back, I think we better focus on the yield curve inversion. Why do I say that? Because it's a seminal moment. I mean, the yield curve really has not inverted since 2006. And if you think what happened after 2006, you had the 07, 08, 09 financial crisis. You had a 53% sell-off in the S&P 500, and you had the Great Recession. What is the yield curve inversion telling us this time? This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. I'm going to weigh in here a little bit on my take on the inverted yield curve, and then we'll let Barry expound. Here's just a little bit of background. You know, the yield curve has been flirting back and forth with inversion over the last several days, but now it looks like it's inverted. I mean, I think we can say the yield curve has inverted, which describes a situation where the longer duration bond has a lower yield than the shorter one. Okay, that's not normal. This represents the opposite condition than usual. You know, if you go out and buy a 10-year bond and tying up your money for 10 years, you want a better return than on a 2-year. But right now you're getting a better return on the 2-year. What does that say? Okay. Well, that means there's concerns. There's not as much confidence in the future of the economy. It is centered around the idea of a potential future recession. Well, it's 100% that there will be a future recession. I mean, the economy is cyclical. Yeah. It's 100% certainty. The question is, when? Okay, the last recession we had was 2006 through 2007, and that was a big one. It was brought about by the financial crisis, and the yield curve presaged the inversion, presaged the Great Recession. Okay, it was second only to the Great Depression as far as, you know, the impact it had on us. The big financial meltdown. It took Herculean types of measures to keep the financial system from collapsing. It had dried
QE
up.
Infinity, right?
Yeah, yeah. QE. Infinity. There's still QE today from that recession. Now, what's going to be the fallout from that? And keep in mind that the yield curve also inverted in the year 2000. That was the worst sell-off I witnessed. I witnessed an 80% sell-off in the NASDAQ. And that pointed the way to the 2001 through 2003 market meltdown. So, you know, I would say this. It doesn't mean the end of the world as far as the stock market and the economy are going. And another thing I would say here, the yield curve is usually pretty far in front of maybe a year, 12 to 18 months is generally kind of the time frame we think of when we could go into a recession due to the yield curve inversion. Predicting that it could happen more quickly, we'll just have to see. But it really changes, and it already has. I mean, this is a totally different year from 2020. It's completely different. It's a commodity year, which we haven't seen for about 10 years or about 10, 8, 9 years, something like that. It's all hard assets, which is also kind of an indication and a sign that investors are worried. you know, you could say the same thing that the stock market has inverted, right, Barry? Look at how inverted we are from the year 2020.
Certainly in terms of the names, right?
And the sectors and the risk that stock investors are willing to take. They're not willing to take the risk by buying long-duration stocks, which should return more over time because they have more upside potential. But it's obvious that investors in the stock market are nervous just as much as investors in the bond market.
Exactly.
I would argue that the stock market started to invert last February. I mean, not this, but in 2021 it started to invert. When all of a sudden the risk takers and the risk in the market, when people looked at their portfolios and they were loaded up with Chinese electric vehicle stocks, cryptocurrency miners, weed cannabis stocks, battery startups, EVs here in America, startups, telemedicine.
Online gambling stocks.
Online gaming.
Online trading stocks with
Coinbase. Robinhood. And on and on and on. All of a sudden, when interest rates started to trickle up over 1 year ago, I continue to use ARK funds as a proxy for that area of the market. There's nothing wrong with that area of the market when the times are good for that area of the market. But as interest rates start to go up and multiples start to correct, people start moving out of that risk area. The smart money leaves first, okay? And then pretty soon people see it selling off, and then you start to get a little panic setting in. The sentiment changes. And right now I would just say the sentiment is just sour on that area of the market. It has its brief moments. It has its days. We just saw a 30% move in ARK upwards, like happy days are here again in that area. But then you immediately saw it snuffed out. So The conditions have changed not only in the stock market considerably. Consider today, as I look at the leading stocks in the market, and it's not EV, it's fertilizer. it's not lithium, it's oil. It's just more short-term stuff that is here now, that is profitable now, that is needed now, instead of going out there on the longer term. So that's just my take, and I do believe we know this. Okay, a recession is closer than it was 5 years ago. I think eventually just the economic cycle has to eventually come to an end. We've had growth in the economy since 2009. We've had earnings increasing for the S&P 500 for the last 12, 13 years, except for the COVID year, which was an extraordinary item. And we're still expecting growth, but I think people are now starting to question the growth, especially. And I think what's the biggest factor in changing that sentiment is the Fed going on the warpath and taking a 40 years of dropping interest rates all of a sudden to rising. Now I'll shut up and let Barry take the last 2 minutes here with a rebuttal or his thoughts on what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I was looking at some statistics, and so certainly an inversion came for each of the last eight recessions since 1969. The most important thing is, you know, there have been other inversions that didn't necessarily lead to a downturn, but the trick is how long is it inverted, and it's basically on average it needs to be inverted for roughly about 3 months, right? And which almost always leads to the recession. So we'll start the clock now, basically.
Yeah, we're just a few days into inversion. Yeah. So we'll keep Barry's going to keep the clock and the calendar on the inversion to see how long it remains inverted. And when we come back, we got to talk about the next big subject is how the war and the continuation of the war is impacting the energy markets and the stock market. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter, or the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Seeing pretty good action in tech sector today, the NASDAQ. And I think the action in Twitter by Elon Musk has kind of helped the NASDAQ quite a bit. Okay, now, let's go to two more. There's actually a couple of wars taking place. Obviously, the one grabbing all the headlines is the Ukraine war, and that's changing the energy markets. And, of course, there continues to be a war. Whether you're for it or not, there's absolutely a war on fossil fuels. And I think nowhere is it more evident than right here in the U.S. and, of course, in Europe. With gas prices as high as they are and oil over $100 a barrel, there's just no appetite or no desire whatsoever to really increase supply, to increase production of oil. That's pretty obvious. I mean, they're opening up the reserves, oil that has already been drilled and put away for a rainy day. But it seems like the world is turning to those reserves as opposed to drilling and for new oil and increasing production. But something's got to give. I think, if anything, the result of this is there seems to be a lengthening of the period of time that it will take to transition. If obviously there can never be a 100% transition from fossil fuels to green energy. When I look at the port of Charleston here and look at the airport and things like that, there's always, and trucks on the highway, of course, maybe they can get most of that on green energy. But it's putting upwards pressure, and especially in the natural gas. And there's a lot of natural gas stories here today. Lithuania has become the first EU country to end imports of Russian gas completely in response to Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. So there you go. The country has turned to liquefied natural gas instead after emphasizing energy security. That's a big name. That's a big phrase being tossed around right now, is energy security. I watched quite a bit of the big conference they had in Dubai last week. It was very much energy-centric. And I listened to, the energy leaders of Saudi Arabia, of the United Arab Emirates, of others. And, they rely on oil, basically. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are very much involved in the production of oil, and so they definitely are tainted in what they say. But they also really emphasized energy security. Look what happened when Germany became dependent upon Russian oil, and now the mess that they're in. So I just think there's going to be quite a while, I mean maybe a decade or two, where there's going to be upwards pressure, and that makes for good investments, in my opinion, especially in natural gas. And there continues to be a clamoring. Now, they don't seem to have a problem, Barry, with increasing natural gas production, liquefying natural gas, as much as they have a problem with the crude oil, which is heavier and dirty. Does that seem like the case to you, that they're accepting, the green energy people are accepting of natural, especially liquid natural
gas?
Yeah, and,
I think it has, I don't know. To me, it just seems like it's, kind of, in between, rock and a hard place, you could call it, or on, kind of on both sides of the fence in terms of, trying to, of course, move to greener energy, but then at the same time, right, needing oil, at least for a period of time, and probably likely longer than all of them anticipate in reality. But it's trying not to encourage investment in oil, and trying to encourage investment in other places to help replace oil. But then at the same time, you need investment in oil, and whether they're trying to guilt some of our, you know, domestic producers into producing more, right? Whether, you know, in terms of calling them out. You know, it's just, you know, it's certainly just a very kind of mixed message is really, I guess, the easiest way to say it in terms of how, you know, kind of how I feel in terms of, you know, wanting to pump more, wanting to encourage it, but then also, you know, not wanting to at the same time. It's just it's a big conundrum and something I don't think some of these folks anticipated, especially at the administration level. You know, didn't anticipate, you know, say 3 years ago. Right?
No, the Russian war changed the whole dynamics here. And okay, so now let's just take a look at some of the companies on the beneficial edge of all of this. I spent most of my life in San Diego, California. San Diego Gas and Electric changed its name to Sempra Energy. The symbol is SRE. They're a major player, actually, in liquid natural gas. I knew one of the head guys there in the financial department at Sempra, and he was telling me about the huge investments they were making in liquid natural gas. And if you look at that stock, it's hitting a new all-time high. It's a utility, but it's kind of a hybrid utility. They have a big investment in Cheniere Energy, LNG, and they are very active building new gas liquefaction facilities in Mexico. And from Mexico, then, they can ship it all over the world. And I'm familiar with some of these places where they're building these, and it takes a while. I mean, you just don't build a liquefaction facility overnight, but Mexico's going in a big way to become a major producer and exporter of natural gas, and they're saying to Sempra, they've teamed up with Sempra Energy, SRE, they want them to build new gas liquefaction facilities in the country and go as fast as they possibly can. Okay, number two. There's a company that wants to, there's really only one big exporter of liquefied natural gas, and it's down there in Houston. It's the LNG, Cheniere Energy. There's a company that's about ready to go online, Tellurian. The symbol is TEL, T-E-L-L. They don't have any sales yet, but they're getting very close. It's called the Driftwood LNG project. And I did see an interview with the TEL CEO the other day. The stock was up 20% last week, and it continues to look pretty good. The CEO was on CNBC indicating Driftwood's payback period could be as short as 18 months. That's pretty amazing. I mean, they're putting in this huge investment, and they're thinking that now that would be considered a short term. I mean, look at Rivian, maybe 7, 8 years, 6 years, if ever, where they start to get a payback on their investment. But Tellurian is saying, man, it could be as short as 18 months. Tellurian is in the pole position to announce commercialization of the next U.S. LNG export terminal. I think it's down there right by the one that Cheniere owns. The stock is up 72% so far this year. Now, the shipping of natural gas, okay? Flex LNG is one of those stocks. It flies high as Cheniere employs the fifth carrier. Flex rallied its FLNG to an all-time high Friday on news that Cheniere exercised its option to employ a fifth LNG carrier. And there's a few other of these transport companies that specialize in transporting liquid natural gas. So there'll be a new ship, the Flex Aurora, will be the fifth ship to deliver Cheniere's natural gas. So there's quite a bit of area to play this whole thing, and I think it's going to be pretty good investment. You talk about investing in electric cars and whatnot, but that's long term, and they had a huge run there in the year 2020. Now you've had an inversion of the stock market, And the market and even the environmentalists and government seem to be turning to liquid natural gas. Now, I remember when liquid natural gas was all the rage. Everybody thought that was next.
And Australia was, Australia, of course, has been a huge exporter initially, but it's hard to find a company to invest in there.
Yes, and then liquid natural gas fell out of favor for several years, but right now, man, it's one of the hottest areas in the market from my perspective. Okay, what's jumping off the page here today? We'll be right back. This is the Best Stocks Now show. Back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. We've covered a lot of ground here today with a pretty big event occurring with that inversion of the yield curve. We're in day two of that inversion of the yield curve.
Yeah, basically started at the beginning of the quarter, so it'd be easy to find our point of reference as we
Move so you're further. Saying 30 days.
Yeah, 3 months. Well, it said 3
months. Oh, 3 months. Yeah, so by the end of the quarter.
Yeah,
okay.
So although my guess is probably after a month, you got a pretty good
I want to go back there.
Yeah, I want to go back and see what some of those other, some of those other times where it's occurred and didn't lead to recession, right? How long those periods were? Was it, a day, a week? You can have some weird treasury auction, not go well, right, and end up inverted for a very short period of time. But in this, expectation-wise, right, we continue to hear about it, and I think that's kind of why the NASDAQ, might be up a little bit today, short of Elon Musk's infusion. But, just in a slower earnings, growth going forward, of course, tech names over the years have had much more margin growth, and so those have been some names that people have rotated into when you start having at least an earnings kind of crunch. So could be that, but like I said, I think most of it's like you mentioned the move with Elon and Twitter today. So
yeah, I go back to the yield curve inversion in the year 2000 and then an 80% sell-off in the NASDAQ.
Yeah.
That one's implanted in my DNA, so I always am on the, I remember that. You can't forget it. All right, now, the stock's jumping off the page to me. Let's begin with a natural gas stock, which we've mentioned several times. This company used to be named Apache, and I guess they changed their name the Cleveland Guardians?
Cleveland Guardians.
And what's the Redskins? They're
Commanders.
The Commanders.
Yeah.
Well, Apache's now APA Corp. But it does say their website is ApacheCorp.com, so it's in Houston, Texas. Not the most politically correct. I don't know if they care about being politically correct in Houston. Well, whatever. But Apache, APA, is on a roll. It's hitting a new all-time high today. You got to have the natural gas to take to the plants to liquefy.
Exactly.
And then to ship, okay, something's got to go into those ship. There's still the hard work of extraction and NGLS, Natural Liquid Gas, Apache, APA, continues to be a leader in that area. They're going to have record earnings this year. And you're looking at a stock that has a relative strength of 99 on a scale of 1 to 100. 99 is as good as it gets, and the P.E. ratio is 11. And I'm going to continue to ignore the songs of the sirens trying to beckon me into the hype growth stocks of 2020, even though they have their days, they have their moments. I just think that the overall direction right now favors, especially with the yield curve inversion, people lowering their risk. They've been de-risking for over a year. I'm going to stick with the high relative strength, low PE. This one fits that Very nicely. The next one is somebody's got to supply all the equipment, the drilling services. Generally speaking, they contract out to people that do that work, these oil companies. And a stock that's been pretty good here recently, it's a small cap company, and it bore drilling. That's a good name. They're boring through the earth. B-O-R-R. It's a Bermuda-based company that provides offshore drilling services to the oil and gas industry. And I've noticed that sector, it's been red hot. So you have the actual, if you look at it by sector, if you take the energy sector, well, it breaks down. There's companies that own pipelines. There's companies that extract oil and gas. There's companies that ship it, transport it. There's companies that refine it. There's a lot of sub-industries within the energy, and these are the drillers. This is the companies that they subcontract out to do the drilling. That's been a hot sector. That's a sector that was really on its back here not too long ago. When you look at Rig, Rig had the big, they were responsible for the big Gulf oil spill. It was their equipment under the ground that broke and caused a lot of that mess. So they're not most popular companies around, but BORR is one of the hottest stocks in the entire market. And then the third one, I'm going to go even more speculative than that. I'm going to go to a company that is finding battery metals in the ocean. Seafloor polymetallic nodules, they call them. Could that be a breakthrough? Could we find what we need for these electric batteries? We've talked about the rare earth minerals and the short supply they're in and the demand there is for them, the run-up that we've seen recently in nickel. Well, there's a little country, a company out of Canada. It's about the same size as Borr Drilling, $600 million in market cap. TMC Metals. The symbol is TMC. These aren't recommendations. These are just stocks that are showing up in my screens here. TMC is a Canadian-based mining company which explores lower-impact battery metals from seafloor polymetallic nodules. That's a mouthful. You could do your own little research on it. I've read about it. It is kind of a one-of-a-kind company right now. So anyways, those are the three, and it's having a good day. It's up 13.3%.
Yeah, and there's more land under the ocean than there is above it. So
yes, and it's okay. Pretty much unexplored.
Percentages seem pretty good. Yeah, right.
Yes, and they seem to have found an area, particular formations in the ocean, on the seafloor, where they can find these rare earth and important metals for the batteries. All right, well, this has been fun. We'll come back. We'll do it again tomorrow. We've got a decent day going on in the market so far, but we do have that big inversion in the yield curve. I wrote all about it in my newsletter. I updated my target price for the S&P 500, and I showed you all the new stocks we've bought recently in my latest newsletter. You can get 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. And some people just want to jump over the newsletter and talk to us. That's fine. 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. All right. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.